This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Welcome to Musings from Greek 365, a podcast series of 8 episodes created by the students in an advanced undergraduate Greek course on the Iliad taught by Professor Deborah Beck at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Ethan Russo, one of the students in the class. This is episode 2 in our series, which is focusing primarily on the last 3 books of the Iliad. These last 3 books cover some of the epic's most iconic moments, such as Achilles and Hector's final combat, the funeral games for Patroclus, and Priam's beseeching of Achilles for his son Hector's body. In the last episode, Professor Beck discussed some aspects of lines 199 to 213 in Book 22, which describe part of the climactic final encounter between the Greek Achilles and Hector, son of the Trojan king Priam, and best of Troy's warriors. In this episode, I will talk about the aftermath of that encounter, which ends in the death of Hector. Specifically, I will be discussing some portions of the speech that Achilles delivers to his Greek companions after Hector's death, and the description of his subsequent disfigurement of Hector's body. If you're following along with the text, these are lines 378 to 404 in Book 22. In particular, I want to focus on Achilles' attitude towards Hector and what he does to Hector's body. To that end, let's turn first to the last 2 lines of Achilles' speech, or lines 393 and 394. During this speech, Achilles will use the first person plural, that is, he shall speak of a we. That we is him and his Greek comrades, to whom he is addressing the speech. The lines read as follows in English. We won a great glory. We killed noble Hector, whom the Trojans and their city prayed to as though a god. The Greek word that I have translated as noble is dios, which, as Irena de Jong notes in her supremely helpful commentary to Book 22, has a somewhat uncertain etymology. Dios is descended either from a root meaning shine or a root meaning belonging to Zeus, but in any event, it usually means godlike or noble in Homer. Additionally, this epithet is used both by the narrator of the poem and in direct speech, and, moreover, its use is not associated with any particular hero. Although used of Achilles 55 times, it is also used of Hector on 38 occasions. With this background in mind, I want to pose a question. Is Achilles being sincere when he calls Hector noble, or dios, or is he being cruel and sarcastic? My initial reactions to the text favored the first interpretation. That is, Achilles is sincerely praising Hector. De Jong presents some evidence that corroborates this view. For instance, Achilles calls Hector the best, in Greek aristos, of the Trojans, and a good, agathos, fighter in Book 21. Moreover, as De Jong suggests, it might be that Achilles' expression of respect for Hector is also a way of showing how great the glory which he has won is. The greater the warrior Hector is, the greater is Achilles' glory for having slayed him. However, one of my classmates noted that dios might be taken as a sarcastic remark at Hector's expense. After all, this would be consistent with the tendency toward anger, to put things lightly, that Achilles demonstrates earlier in the Iliad, and sarcasm would also square, perhaps, with the unseemly treatment of Hector's body in the lines immediately following the speech. Would Achilles, if he truly respected Hector, treat his body so badly? Interestingly, the ancient scholar Aristarchus thought that these 2 lines might be spurious or inauthentic, because he thought it was very strange that Achilles should praise Hector as dios here, when in Book 16 he says that Patroclus alone could have defeated Hector. This fact has a little to offer to both sides of the issue, I think. On the one hand, taking dios as sarcastic would eliminate the aspect of praise which Aristarchus found objectionable. On the other, that Aristarchus thought the line spurious perhaps indicates that he didn't see a way for dios to express anything but praise. I should note also that there is a third option. Because dios is so common an epithet, for Achilles, for Hector, for other heroes, it may be that it has no special flavor here, and instead is used here just because it helps complete the meter of the line. Under this interpretation, the word would, so to speak, just be metrical filler. Of these 3 interpretations, the only one I am wholly unsatisfied by is the last. I find it pretty implausible that dios occurs here by accident. My feeling is motivated by line 395, which occurs right after Achilles finishes speaking. In the Greek, it reads, Eira kai hektora dion aekia medito erga, which in English says, so he, Achilles, spoke, and he, Achilles, was planning unseemly actions for noble Hector. As you might have heard, the Greek word for noble is again dios. Not only that, but dios is placed right next to the adjective, which describes the actions that Achilles is planning to wreak upon Hector's body, aekia. Aekia, from aekes, means shameful, shameful, or even better, I think, unseemly. Though it seems to me that unseemly is too weak or tame a word in English to carry the force of aekia, which is really more of an unseemly plus, so to speak. The juxtaposition of aekia, describing the unworthy or undignified things Achilles is going to do to Hector, and dios, describing the brilliance and nobility of Hector, is incredibly powerful. For the gaping chasm between the words, one describing nobility, the other disfigurement, prefigures the violence and brutality of the treatment which Achilles is about to inflict on Hector's body. The juxtaposition is also deeply pathetic, in the sense of arousing pity, that is. Hector, once noble, is about to suffer vile things. Because dios is used to such powerful effect in 395, I find it hard to believe that the poet deployed it in 393, just two lines earlier, for merely the sake of metrical convenience. Whatever the sense of dios, I want to continue to examine what unseemly things Achilles is planning for Hector's body. The description of these acts begins on 396. Achilles first pierces the tendons of Hector's feet and runs a leather thong through the piercings. Then he attaches the thong to his chariot and proceeds to put the chariot in motion, dragging Hector's body through the dust. This passage is, for my money, one of the Iliad's most powerful, and I don't think I'm alone in thinking this. The Latin poet Virgil, in his own epic, the Aeneid, describes Hector visiting the hero Aeneas in a dream. Virgil makes careful note there of Hector's thong-pierced feet and how he's covered in gory dust. What is the point of all this mutilation? Certainly we can say that Achilles wants to defile Hector's body because he is angered over the death of Patroclus, but that doesn't answer the further question of why defilement of the body provides an adequate outlet for that anger. The scholar P.J. Vernant, whom De Jong quotes in her commentary, gives a very good answer to this question, I think. Vernant says, by dirtying and disfiguring the corpse instead of purifying and mourning it, aekia, that is, disfiguring treatment, seeks to destroy the individuality of a body that was the source of the charm of youth and life. And indeed, Homer's lines seem at some points to de-individualize Hector, which portrays the brutality of Achilles' treatment, and at other points to stress his singular identity, which serves to assert Hector's nobility even in the face of death. For instance, the description of the piercing of Hector's feet is, in a sort of way, clinical. For the description focuses on parts of Hector's body. It names explicitly his feet, his tendons, his ankle, and his heels. It seems to me that this focus on body parts implies Hector's de-individualization. He is being described as a corpse, as a mere body, not as an individual person. In other places, however, subtle, beautiful details seem to assert Hector's particular exceptionality. For instance, his hair is described as quaniae on line 402, or dark in hue. One modern commentator notes that this adjective and compounds of it are usually reserved for the hair of gods. That Hector's hair is so described suggests, then, his own godliness. One little adjective reminds us readers that this is no ordinary body, but rather the body of noble Hector. As I see things, then, these lines not only describe the mutilation of Hector's body, but also rhetorically enact or perform the effect of this mutilation. In my view, the lines at time seem to mirror Achilles' dehumanization and de-individualization of Hector. However, the lines do not fall silent there. Their intention is not Achilles' intention. Their intention is not only to dehumanize Hector. Their intention is to portray this dehumanization, but also to emphasize his nobility by showing how the mutilation fails to dehumanize him, as the example of quaniae shows. This is an interpretation which I've only come to recently, so if you have any thoughts about it, please record them in the comments. I've talked for quite a while now about the text of the Iliad, but I want to turn now to my experience of teaching it. All of my classmates and I, in addition to recording these podcasts, are serving in our Greek class as a teacher of the day for one class period each. What we want to teach and how we teach it is left almost totally up to us. I found the experience a little daunting, but ultimately exhilarating and educational, for me certainly, and I hope as well for my classmates. The question about Achilles' use of dios, which I discussed above, came in fact straight from my experience of teaching. As I mentioned before, it was one of my classmates who suggested that dios might be sarcastic, a possibility which I had not considered. I was a little nervous before my class period because I had a somewhat unconventional activity planned for my classmates. The lines which I was teaching included three very emotional speeches: the speech of Achilles, detailed above, and the speeches which Priam and Hecuba, who are Hector's parents, make after they learn their son has been killed. I asked my classmates to try reciting some lines from these speeches with an eye to emotion. I wanted them to give dramatic recitations which would emphasize the emotionally charged nature of the text. My motivations for this were grounded in some research about medieval pedagogy that has been done by Professor Marjorie Woods, who is an English professor at UT, and which is detailed in her book Weeping for Dido, which is forthcoming in February 2019. I highly recommend it. Professor Woods argues that dramatic recitations, albeit of Latin texts, such as Virgil's Aeneid, may have figured in the education of schoolboys in the Middle Ages in Europe. The emotions roused for these recitations, Professor Woods argues, furthermore, may have been a powerful aid to memory. In other words, emotions may have been used in medieval classrooms to help teach Latin and to help students remember it. I think the exercise worked well for some people. Here's one of my classmates speaking about his experience with the activity.
I really liked how you included aspects of medieval pedagogy, having us read aloud and recite particularly evocative passages in a way that helped us engage not just with the text itself and the characters and how they deal with Hector's death, but it also cued us into the greater tradition of Homeric reception in a way that I found very interesting.
For others, I don't think the activity went over quite as well. I take to heart a very helpful and insightful comment from another of my classmates, which suggested that I could have provided alternate modes for exploring the emotions in these passages for those to whom such acting is not so natural or comfortable. I think this person is absolutely right, and could I run class again, I would try to find more options. That being said, I still think the experiencing of emotions of the Iliad through dramatic recitation is a valuable experience. And if you, listener, have a copy of the Iliad close by, in either Greek or English, I'd encourage you to find some of your favorite lines from a speech or narration and try giving them a reading with feeling. The experience of literature can be an embodied one, as well as one purely critical and mental. Thank you so much for tuning into episode 2 of Musings from Greek 365. I'm Ethan Russo, and I hope you'll lend your ears to my fellow classmates in their episodes of this podcast as well. If you have any questions, feedbacks, or thoughts, please leave us a comment below. Thanks. This has been Musings from Greek 365.